Things went further by the end of the year, and in November of 1589, some 50 politique notables, that is to say, notables who felt that it was appropriate to make concessions to the Huguenots and the Protestants in order to have social order and political peace, some 50 politique notables were publicly hanged in the marketplaces. Finally, in September of 1590, after the relief of Paris by the Spanish army, a deputation from the 16 visited the camp of Parma, the Spanish general, and Mayenne, the head of the League. And what they asked for was, first of all, a restoration of the League's general council, which Mayenne and his aristocratic supporters had consistently bypassed. They demanded a dismissal of Mayenne's advisors, who had neglected the plight of the lower classes. And they also asked for a tribunal to ferret out suspected traitors in the Parisian magistracy. It was a really shocking set of demands to the conservatives in the Catholic League, and some of Mayenne's entourage seemed to have thought that the 16 was willing to go so far as to abolish the monarchy altogether. Mayenne therefore began to use his influence to support conservative candidates in the municipal elections, and the senior magistrates of the Parlement now began to dissociate themselves from the 16. In fact, although from surviving membership lists, we can see that by this point, by early 1591, the social composition of the Paris 16 has changed rather radically, and its previously elevated elements, the high magistrates and people like that, have all left, and the 16 is now overwhelmingly composed of minor administrative and legal officials and parish priests. After a second attempt to place their candidates in the town hall failed in August of 1591, the radicals within the Paris 16 then again turned to terrorism. They seized the president and several councillors of the Parlement of Paris. They subjected them to a mock trial, and they publicly hanged them on the 15th of November, 1591. This was too much for Mayenne and the League. Mayenne now entered Paris in force. He arrested as many of the 16 as he could get his hands on. Those judged responsible for the election, for the execution of the parlementaires were themselves put to death, and the rest of the 16 either fled Paris or went underground. Radicals within the 16 would continue to publish tracts denouncing Henry of Navarre and other traitors, but their basic political power was broken. The second source of Henry of Navarre's triumph, the second source that is besides this fear of anarchy either in the countryside or of radicalism inside the cities, was the basic problem of an alternative to Henry of Navarre. If Henry of Navarre was not going to be king of France, who else would it be? Even the most radical members of the League agreed that some form of constitutional monarchy would have to replace the heretic king. When the League was reformed in 1584, it had a candidate. It declared as heir to the throne Charles, the Cardinal of Bourbon, the uncle of Henry of Navarre, and brother of the deceased Antoine de Bourbon and Louis de Condé. The Cardinal of Bourbon was a convenient candidate because he was a member of the House of Bourbon, this house which stood mount the throne after the extinction of the House of Valois, but he was also an impeccable Catholic, being a Cardinal of the Church. Unfortunately for the Catholic League, the Cardinal of Bourbon died in 1590, depriving them of their best candidate from the family of the first princes of the blood. At first, the problem was shelved, but worries about radicalism, and especially worries that war weariness would drive Catholics to a negotiated peace with Henry of Navarre, forced the League to act. And therefore, in January of 1593, the Catholic League summoned an Estates General, a representative assembly of all of France, to meet in Paris. In practice, it didn't represent all of France. It only represented those portions of the countryside which the League controlled. But it was nonetheless a very important and influential assembly. A lot of candidates showed up, Catholic candidates for the monarchy, and most of them had at least some kind of blood relationship with the royal stock. The truth is that the French aristocracy, like all European aristocracies, was so heavily intermarried that it wasn't that hard to find someone with some kind of a branch connection to the royal family. The problem, however, was that although everyone could agree on the theory of getting together and electing a king, the practical problem of choosing a king was quite another matter. There was always the danger of factional rivalry, dividing people and preventing them from settling on a candidate. The Spanish ambassador who was there made some tactless comments proposing a child of the King of Spain marry a member of the House of Guise and that they should mount the throne. This agitated French sentiments of their independence and rivalry with the Spanish. And in the end, difficulties inherent in the actual process of electing a monarch delayed matters for so long that opinion began to swing back towards the idea of finding someone who had a hereditary claim to the French throne. And in the meantime, while the Catholic Estates General was dithering in Paris, Henry IV struck a really stunning counterblow. That is to say, he converted to Catholicism. Of course, Henry of Navarre had been warned by Henry III on Henry III's deathbed that Navarre would only gain the throne by becoming a Catholic. And Navarre was ultimately forced to face the fact that France simply would not accept a Protestant king.